Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, December 3rd, 2015. It's 3:14 UTC as we're starting to record this. It's pi o'clock. It was actually even better. It was 3:14 and 15 seconds.
Oh, wow.
It was like right on the nose.
Wow.
Of course, that's not actually right because it's 14 out of 60, which is not the same as 14 out of 100. So it's not actually the right fraction, and the 15 even less so. And so it's just a coincidence of numbers. It's not anything that actually means anything useful to anything. It's just, but you know.
Yeah.
There's still 3:14:15.
Yep. Close enough for me.
Okay, anyway.
Anyway.
I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here with us again. Hello, Yvonne.
Aloha.
And our main
aloha?
Agenda.
Aloha? That's okay, one of those
things. Our main agenda. We did have a shooting in San Bernardino that is actually, there's still news going on in the aftermath of that right now, so there's a lot of fresh stuff. It's only a few hours old, really, so a lot of stuff still in flux. We had the shooting at the Planned Parenthood almost a week ago as well, so we will talk about those kinds of things. We will talk about election 2016, because there's, as usual, been more sort of election stuff happening related to the candidates and what's going on and all this kind of stuff. And finally, I guess there's a variety of internationalist stuff. The main thing is the climate summit is going on, so maybe we'll talk a little bit about the climate, global warming, what people want to do about it, maybe. But also there are a couple other international things. The administration announced essentially what's an escalation of our involvement with special forces in Iraq and Syria, and the UK voted to also join in on the bombing of ISIS in Syria. So those are our main topics. You got anything interesting for our little but first segment, Yvonne? If you don't, I've got a couple things.
I figured out that I did this calculation that we burn or we produce 33% less CO2 than the average American household.
By we, you mean you, your wife,
yeah,
and your son.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Our household. Okay. I found it quite shocking, considering all, I was looking at the components, and honestly, the biggest source of our CO2 is my air travel. Now, yeah, the reality is that if I didn't travel as much, it's quite shocking to me. Say, if I just work remotely and didn't actually travel, that my CO2 consumption would be like almost like 60% below the average American household.
Wow.
Which is stunning.
I'm sure we'd be above average.
You think?
I think we'd be above average. That's my guess. Whenever we get those little comparisons of like our electricity bill versus our neighbors and stuff, we're always ahead of the neighbors.
Wow. So. Okay. Now we spend. I mean, our electric bill. Well, first of all, we live in a condo, and it's relatively small for compared to the average American home. I mean, it's only about 1,700 square feet. And honestly, I've avoided. I don't want to move to anywhere bigger. Okay. In part, it's because of the carbon footprint, and the other part is because the bigger you got, the more shit to clean, the more shit to do. Bop, 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 bop. So, and we've managed to live comfortably, quite comfortably, actually, with this size. Okay? And so, the thing is that we only spend only electric. We don't have gas. We don't have anything. So, you spend about $170 on electric a month, which I found that in Florida is about average, I think. Now, I think that the carbon footprint also that it calculated also, I think, relies, because you tell it what your location you're in, and so it depends on what your electric is also being generated, from, okay? So if you've got a state that, I guess, uses quite a lot of mix of, like, coal and other things or whatever, obviously your footprint would be a lot bigger. I guess the reason I brought that up is, like, damn, people really I mean, the average American really fucking produced a lot of CO2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I realize, I mean, because I thought, look, we don't have like the most like hybrid cars or anything like that, right? But the reason we produce less, I guess, is because I don't know. I mean, we're just not as, I don't know. I mean, we're pretty frugal with most of the stuff that does that. I mean, I don't know. What are you? So that was just surprising in the finding. I figured that I would find myself to be far more carbon producing.
Like I said, I suspect that we would be above average, but I don't have any stats or anything in front of me. So you actually did the analysis. I have not.
Okay. Well, let me put it this way. It's an eye opener to find that out. I'll tell you, because I thought that honestly, I thought I would be above average. So, I don't know. Maybe you do the analysis, you find something different. I don't know.
Maybe.
So anyway, I just thought that was interesting.
So I'll do my butt first. I've been getting frustrated with the school system. This should be a big shock and surprise. My son is now in kindergarten. As we've mentioned before, he's on the spectrum, so he's got a few issues, but this I don't think is particularly related to that. So he came in, he's been doing preschool in a Montessori program for a couple years now. And at that school, he's, you know, already doing, you know, multiplication tables and, you know, an addition of two digit numbers and things like that. And so he was coming home from his kindergarten at the public school with homework that was basically like, you know, mark which ones of these are circles, you know, or count how many of these things there are with numbers up to 10. And those kinds of things, which basically things he had been,
what is that for, morons?
Things he had been able to do easily and without thinking about them much, you know, when he was two or three.
Yeah.
You know, and he's six now. And I understand there's sort of a standardized kindergarten curriculum and not everybody's at the same place. And so it's the public schools are very much one size fits all as much as they can get away with. And so, you know, this is what they were doing. So after a few weeks of this, we sent in and, you know, we're like, hey, can we, he's very bored with the math stuff and he's a little behind on the reading stuff. So, okay, fine. We can challenge him on the reading stuff, but he's a little bit bored on the math stuff. Can we get him, some, you know, something else to do here? Because here's some of his work from the other school and we, you know, sent in like pictures of the work he'd done at the other school where he was doing multiplication and stuff like that. And so they did after a couple weeks say, oh, okay, fine. Here's some, we're going to give him some first grade worksheets.
Okay.
Okay, great. So there are a couple things. We got the first packet, we got the first sheet last week and the first real packet this week of these things. And so, first of all, here are the things that I found frustrating. First of all, they got the packet of five worksheets to do by Friday. Okay, these came home Monday, turn them in on Friday, right? And so, first of all, it's just a lot of work, of work for a six-year-old. Okay, so you know, so completely aside from can he do this, there's sort of the, here's a crap load of work to put in front of you. And it almost felt like when we got this packet that, okay, what you're trying to do here is you're like, goddamn uppity parents asking for more work. We'll show them more work. We'll give them so much that we overwhelm everything and they'll beg us to not do it anymore. Right. So we're trying to do it anyway. And he is frustrated by the fact that it is a lot of work. Compared to anything he's had before, obviously it's not very much compared to what he will get in later grades. But then the other thing that's happened is on one we got back. So there's two things that when you're in sort of the kindergarten, first grade level, one thing is the actual math itself. The other is, of course, you're still working on writing things. So like if you're writing 4 plus 5 equals 9, well, do you write the 9 correctly? Or do you write the 9 backwards? Or do you write the 9 upside down, which would make it a 6? But, you know, or any of these kinds of things. And one of the things that's getting to me, and one reason is because it brings back bad memories of something that happened to me in 6th grade. But they don't separate out these two skills. So you have your math worksheet. And if it's, for instance, 5 plus 4, and you put equals 9, but you write the 9 backwards, they just send it back with a big red X on it and say, correct it. Right?
Okay,
I understand it was written incorrectly, but it seems like you'd be more efficient testing these two things sort of separately. Like, on one channel, let's practice writing your numbers. Let's practice writing your numbers and getting them right and writing them clearly and blah, blah, blah. And on the other channel, let's do the math right. So if it's clearly you got the number right, okay, fine. If that's what you're doing math problems, you got it right, whether you wrote it right or not. But you should have something else where it seems like these things should be separate, not together, because otherwise you're implying you're not doing the math right, when in fact what you're not doing right is the writing. And the reason it brings back bad memories for me is, in 6th grade, my mother moved to Indianapolis. We had been in North Carolina before that. My mother went to Indianapolis for graduate school. I went with her. I got put into this school that was a quote-unquote back-to-basics school. And at that point, it was for 6th grade. In 5th grade, before 5th grade, I had hated math, because it was all arithmetic and memorization and stuff. But in 5th grade, they gave us, they started doing geometry and proofs and algebra. And they actually let me do, I guess not algebra yet, but they let me zoom through the geometry book, the 5th grade book, and start the 6th grade book and do a lot of it. And so I was having fun in math. And then I hit this 6th grade class in this back to basics place. And they were once again doing basic arithmetic, which, okay, fine, but I would turn in these sheets where I would do the math, and I would do all the math correctly, but then I would get them back, and I'd end up with like a 70 or 80% or something like that, or sometimes less, not because any of the actual math was wrong, but because I was drawing my twos incorrectly. Oh. And so every problem I did that included the number 2 was wrong.
They're marked wrong.
Every single problem that included the number 2 was marked wrong every single time, because I think I drew my 2 with a little loop on it instead of flat or something like that. I forget, but you know.
But was the professor just being a dick?
This was what they were concentrating on, because they were concentrating on basic skills. Now, luckily, my mom got me out of that in just a few weeks to another program that did better for me. But this reminds me of that kind of stuff. And I'm just frustrated by it already, because I can see it's like, you know, I mean, I fully understand. Okay, you have to learn to write your numbers and letters in a way that people
can
read.
Don't mark them wrong. Tell them, hey, let's teach you how to write this right.
Yeah, or something. And I don't know. So I'm, and of course, the other thing, and I should have mentioned this first even. When this new packet was given to my son, the teacher introduced it to him by saying, okay, now here's a new math packet for you. These are going to be really tricky.
And how tricky were they really?
Well, no, here's the thing. They're trickier than anything they were doing in that class, but they're all things that he had actually been doing before at the other school. But he has been quoting to us the fact that the teacher said that they were really hard as a reason why he can't do them.
Huh?
They're really hard. I can't do them. The teacher said they were tricky. Basically, by her introducing it that way, she's discouraging him from doing it.
Well, he's being just a little bit too easily discouraged. I mean, you know.
And or giving him an excuse when he doesn't want to do it.
That sounds to me like a little thing.
But either way, it's like the way you introduce something new to somebody like that is, we hear you like math and are excited by math. Here's some really cool things. These will be fun. Not, here's something really tricky that's going to be hard.
I mean,
I guess it depends on the kid. I mean, some kids may be motivated by the fact you say it's tricky and hard.
I mean, I gotta be, to some people, that's a motivator, not a demotivator.
True. But, you know, he's sort of, from the very beginning, he's like, I can't do this. It's too hard. I can't do it. It's too hard.
Well,
but meanwhile, it's all stuff he's done before.
Well, anyway.
So, and I can tell already that I am going to spend the next 12 years frustrated by the school systems. Unless we end up figuring out a way to, like, switch them to some private school or something, which I don't know if we'll be able to afford this time around. But, you know, it's just because I could tell, like, I mean, I was frustrated when Amy was going through this a number of years ago as well. There was one teacher she had where she had to write like a little story or something like that. And she mentioned something about the Princess of Wales, right? Like, you know, Princess Diana was the Princess of Wales. And the teacher returned it with a big red X over Princess of Wales because she had put W-A-L-E-S and crossed it out and said W-H-A-L-E-S. You know, the big mammal.
Oh, my God. Oh, come on.
And
come on.
Yes. And I know you get lucky or you don't on individual teachers. And some teachers are really, really good. And some teachers are really, really bad. But a lot of it is sort of. Yes, I know. A lot of it is institutional inertia and we're going to treat every kid the same and blah, 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 where, you know, if you've got anybody who's even a little bit out of the ordinary in terms of they're really good at one subject or really bad at another subject, the one size fits all doesn't do it, you know, and yeah, a little flexibility is useful in figuring out, well, how does it work for this kid versus that kid? But the problem is that that's not scalable if you've got classes of 25, 30 kids.
Wow.
You know, and, but I know.
It's very pricey, you know, when you're,
I know. But it seems like, you know, this, if you know, when we talk about, like, where to spend money and how to spend money and, you know, whether we should spend $18 billion on the new defense program, every time one of those things comes up, it's like, you know, how about just smaller class sizes? Yeah, you know, forget about all the other educational newfangled thingamajigs and testing and all that. How about just smaller class sizes? It would make a huge difference. And pay teachers enough to get good people in that position. I mean, there are lots of good teachers, don't get me wrong, but there's lots of people who aren't as well, and there are a lot of people who would be good teachers, but look at it and say, they pay you what? Ha 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 ha, and go into industry instead. Fine. Okay. My rant is over. Let's take a break, and we'll actually do the San Bernardino and all that stuff first when we come back from this. Back after this. This is Sam from the future here. In the next segment, we discuss the shootings in San Bernardino, which at the time we were recording this was a breaking news event. And so we're saying a lot of things based on incomplete information, information that changes over time. So, of course, take that into account when listening to this, because you as a listener probably already know a lot more than we did at the time we recorded this. Back to the episode. Okay, we are back. So, since our last show, we've apparently had two mass shootings in the U.S. Well, no, two big ones that have made the news. A lot more if you go by the definition of four at a time. There were two just in the last 24 hours, apparently.
Right.
So once again, we do have the whole cycle going with certain people calling for gun control, certain people yelling at those people for politicizing things.
Okay, like I said about this, can you just find to insert now, sometime before we've talked about a shooting, and just change like the name of the shooting to like whatever, and we just
copy and paste the whole discussion
in, because
it's always all the same.
Yes. I mean, it's the same shit. Nothing's happened. I mean, what am I? Do I have to go through this? I mean, I'll start. We have to say it's the same shit and nothing happens. You know, everybody is like locked in this thing where they say that nothing can be done. The Second Amendment, blah, blah, blah. Guns don't kill people. People do. Blah, 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 blah.
Yes. So the differences that may be coming up with this, with these last two, because there was also the one at the Planned Parenthood a few days back, are, you know, does, you know, is there a political aspect here? You know, to Planned Parenthood one, it's looking like yes. Although I do think a lot of people really jumped the gun on that at first, just assuming it had to be because it was a Planned Parenthood, and it looks like it was. But you got to hold your fire a little bit, right?
Right. You know, you got to find out really the facts. And I know that it, you know, it came out like people were like saying like right out that some police officer thing went and said, you know, that during the interview he said something about baby parts.
Right.
No more baby parts, something like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it does look like that's, and he's got a history, apparently had done something with, like, some kind of petty damage to another abortion clinic a number of years ago, something, so he does have a history, it looks like it's probably going there. The other thing on this one, though, is just within the last half hour, they released the name of one of the shooters in San Bernardino, and it's Syed Farouk. So we know where everything's going with that one now.
Oh, boy.
So he apparently is a U.S. citizen. I'm not sure what country that name comes from, but everybody's now talking about his background and, you know, whether this was a coordinated attack, blah, 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 blah. And so we'll see if that plays out. But, you know, in the end, here's my thing. It shouldn't really matter. He goes in and kills 14 people. I don't care if he's killing the 14 people because he's a disgruntled ex-employee, or he is doing it because he wants to support ISIS, or whether he's a crazy person who just wants to kill 14 people and it's random. Any of these things result in 14 people dead. I don't really think what his particular motive was actually makes a big difference here. If you're dead, if you're one of those 14 people, you're dead regardless. You know, but it will dramatically change how people react to this. And you've already got people like the early reports were like it was a white guy and blah, blah, blah. And so people were talking about, you know, this was a, you know, a right wing militia kind of guy and blah, blah, blah. And shaping the narrative based on that. There were all the kinds of people, you know, like we said, already revving up all the gun control arguments. And now, of course, people are like, well, ha, 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 look, it's a radicalized Muslim and that changes everything and I don't know. In terms of, as you said, rewind the tape to our last gun control thing.
Yep. Yep.
You know, I'm not particularly in favor of guns, but all the people who are talking about all of the laws that are talked about wouldn't make a damn bit of difference to this kind of thing. Because this particular situation was apparently organized people who went out and they had an arsenal and they had protective gear and they had this and they had that. And the NRA type folks who say, no matter what laws you pass, people who want to do this kinds of thing will still be able to do it, are absolutely right. The place that gun control laws potentially do have an effect are on all the small random killings, all the suicides, blah, 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 all the things like that. But that rely on discouraging people from getting guns. And of course, the gun control people don't want to say that outright because they want to say, it's okay for the people who pass all these checks to have guns. We just don't want the unstable people. But fundamentally, all of the gun control arguments rely on the fact if you have less guns out there, less people will be killed by guns, and therefore
it's not
blah,
just
blah,
an
blah.
Argument; it's facts.
My point, though, was the disconnect because people always concentrate on these mass killings and high profile events, and then propose things that may actually have a good effect on the murder rate overall, and that's frankly, as far as I'm concerned, good, but wouldn't actually have an effect on these mass events at all. And also, I get frustrated by these mass events because people do blow them out of proportion. And I've seen people, let's concentrate on these mass events and it's a distraction to talk about the overall murder rates. I think it's exactly the reverse. When you're paying attention to these little high-profile events, you're letting yourself get distracted by, the sparkly thing that is all over the news and obviously very traumatic for the people involved, etc. But, the number of people killed in these high-profile mass killings is negligible compared to the people killed one-off here and there all over the country all the time. And so if you actually want to make a difference to anything, what you've got to look at is, the overall numbers and not these particular high profile events. Because even if you solve these high profile events and made it so that there were no more mass shootings, you still have all the little one-offs and they're much,
right.
They kill many more people anyway. Having said that, the fact is, the reality is, as we've said over and over on these, is there is the current political situation in the United States is that we've got the status quo and it's going to stay that way. Period. Yep. End of story.
Yep. There you go. We finally got to the punchline.
Now, unless
what?
If this guy does turn out to be an ISIS agent and doing a coordinated attack that was planned out of Syria, then we may have a reaction to it that does something. Now, however, I don't think that something is particularly going to be effective to do jack shit, because right. It's probably going to be let's go bomb a few more places in Syria.
Bomb.
Or something like that. And
we haven't been bombing the bejesus out of all these people for how long now?
Yeah. So I think if it does turn out that it is, organized Islamic terrorism out of ISIS or something, then there will be some sort of knee-jerk reaction, but nothing that makes any sort of long-term difference whatsoever. If it turns out to not be that, like the one weird thing, like I don't think the Islamic terror narrative actually lines up. Although I should say it's still only a few hours old, so there's all kinds of wrong information out there and things are still very much in flux. But a lot of the reports in the last couple hours have said that this guy apparently was in the meeting at the place, got up and left, and then came back with his buddies and shot the place up.
Okay.
So, like, that's not an... And it's also a very... Like, if it was ISIS or something, why would you pick a Christmas party for... What was it? The county health commission. The county public health commission or something like that. I could see that being a target for one of these anti-abortion guys if the county health commission did abortions. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like a likely ISIS target. Like, you know, they would want something more high profile, more whatever.
Yeah, I would say. I think that in all likelihood is, you know, just a disgruntled.
I mean, it seems like whoever did this had some sort of connection.
Grudge,
some kind of connection to the group of people he shot up. It seemed like it was very targeted. But usually, there are a lot of things that don't add up yet, and I'm sure this will come together over the next few days. But usually in those kinds of situations, it is one guy. But apparently here we had at least two, maybe three people involved. So, like, usually when you get the disgruntled employee situation, they don't manage to get, like, a couple of their buddies to come in with them on it, you know?
Yeah, true.
But, so, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, in all of these situations, the bottom line is on both, there's this instinctual reaction to, we must do something. And then people gravitate towards something. And in the case of gun control, usually nothing ends up happening. But in the case of terrorism, something happens. But in any of these cases, we're not making calm, rational decisions based on what would actually make a positive difference towards this kind of thing in the future. Instead, we're making some sort of knee-jerk emotional response that's just like, we got to do something.
Right, well, let's bomb them. Bomb.
But like, can we at least stop to think about, okay, if we did this, does it actually help?
Why?
Or does it just make us feel better?
What's the fun in that?
Well, and I guess, I mean, you could make the argument that even if it doesn't quote unquote do anything in the long term, making us feel better has a value in and of itself. I don't particularly buy that, but I can see people making that argument says, you know, that no, this won't stop more terrorism in the future, but if we bomb the hell out of them, it'll make us feel a lot better.
Yeah. And that's all that matters, right?
Yeah. And of course, the like I said, this is breaking news. There's still developments happening. I just saw a tweet go by, but somebody noted that different media outlets have posted pictures of different people next to this guy's name. And they were mentioning they saw at least five of them. So there's all kinds of bad information, misinformation out there that, like, things aren't, tied together yet, you know? So, and we still, there's a lot of heat of the moment stuff. There's not even a final determination here. Were there two people involved? Were there three people involved? Blah, blah, blah. We certainly don't know their motives, all of this kind of stuff. So, you know, everybody sort of hold your horses. I know it's frustrating in these kinds of events, but you just gotta wait. I mean, you got to wait until you have some better knowledge of exactly what happened and why and who was involved and blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, when it comes time to talk about what to do next, you got to include, does this actually make a difference? What are the pros and cons? What are the trade-offs? And yeah, I mean, I want to do something too to reduce the incidence of this and this of violent murders in this country in general. Like, if I had to frame this problem, I would not talk about mass shootings. I would not talk about guns. I would zoom way out to violent deaths in America, because if you look at violent deaths per 100,000 or whatever, we're still at like five times the rate of any other developed country, regardless of weapon or whatever. And it's true, a lot of them are gun related.
We get a lot of people killed every year.
And so, like, so I would say, well, what can we figure out some underlying causes and why our society is more violent than other societies?
I don't know. Gee whiz. Maybe something like the fact that we got more in some places. There's more gun shops than freaking gas stations.
No. I know. And that may be one of the things. But I the more I see of all of this kind of stuff, the more I think, I don't think there's a legislative solution to this. I think the answer is slowly over generations changing people's attitudes and ways they interact with things.
Listen, the problem is, look, when you make something this pervasively available to everybody every day, and you glorify it, you make it, you talk about it. I mean, it's just, there's no easy way to change it. I mean, you're not going to get all the hundreds of millions of guns out there off the people's hands, like, right away. You have this entire culture all around it. It's tough to change quickly.
No, and that's the thing. This is the kind of thing that does not change in short periods of time. It's the kind of things that changes over the course of 100 years as attitudes gradually change.
Yep.
And by the way, it's also important to remember, I mentioned that, our violent death rate is something like 5 times higher than other industrialized countries. And I don't know the exact number is 5. It might be a little higher, a little lower. I'm, off the top of my head there. It's higher. But it's also important to notice it's been consistently dropping since the 1970s.
True.
So we're headed in the right direction.
Right.
So.
Which is not there yet.
And it is just when you see people freaking out about it, like there's this big new trend and all kinds of bad things are happening right now. Yes, it's bad. It could be a lot better, but it's actually better than it used to be. And so let's not forget that either.
Okay.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back. And before we take that break, one more thing on this.
One more thing. Oh,
people
boy.
Have been making fun of a lot of public figures, specifically a lot of the presidential candidates put out statements or put out tweets almost right away. Our thoughts and prayers are with the people of San Bernardino, etc.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have been making fun of them, basically saying, fuck your thoughts and prayers. Why don't you do something about it? And I believe the New York Post or somebody like dedicated their whole front page to basically that theme. And then there've been a backlash of people saying, don't make fun of prayers. Prayers are important to a lot of people, and the point here, although there's a lot, look, there are a lot of reasons to potentially make fun of prayers in and of themselves. But the point here in general was not, your prayers suck. The point was,
they wanted action. It's just those wishes.
You're making an empty statement. It's essentially a rote statement. Thoughts and prayers are with. Thoughts and prayers are with. Thoughts and prayers are with.
Stop with the fucking thoughts and prayers and do something to fix the damn problem.
Right. Without anything backing up behind it. So we're not, all of these people were not necessarily directly making fun of the fact that you were doing a prayer. Although some of them were. Some of them were, by the way.
But I think probably most weren't. But they were just,
most
stop the MG gestures, do something.
Yeah, exactly. But do something is subject to all the things I said before. Okay, now that break. We'll be back after this.
Facebook, Facebook, Facebook!
Hey, do you want to help support Curmudgeon's Corner? Well, right now, the best way is through Facebook. If you haven't already liked us on Facebook, and you actually, like us, then go search for Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook and like our page. It will help you see when we announce new episodes, and it'll help us reach more new people, too. If you like a particular episode, like our episode announcement post too, or share it with your friends. All of this helps spread the word about our podcast to more people who might like it as well. And of course, we love having a conversation with all of you listeners, so please use Facebook to leave comments on the shows, give us suggestions, or anything else like that. It's always great to hear from you. So, if you want to help the show, use Facebook. or forget all of that and just send us money.
And we are back, and it's time to talk about election 2016.
Yes!
Is anything happening there?
No, nothing's happened.
Okay, let's move on.
All right, let's move on. Well, let's see. Or maybe. Well, one thing. There was an article in the New York Times today. Or not today. In the last week. I can't remember exactly what day it was. That basically talked about that the GOP is just completely freaked out.
The establishment GOP stuff.
The establishment GOP is reaching their complete freakout moment. They basically... I think that one key GOP guy, when asked about what would happen if Trump actually wins the nomination, sent back some article about what happened when Barry Goldwater, I think it was Goldwater, right? 64?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Got the nomination. It was a complete annihilation of the Republican Party in that election. And basically, that's exactly what they're predicting. To me, it's... You know, if Trump does hold that, I'm looking at some polls. We'll talk about polls later. But, you know, looking at the Republicans are – they're freaked out. The establishment is completely at the meltdown freak out stage. They believe that if Trump wins the nomination, rightly so, given the negative numbers that Trump has nationally, especially with big groups such as women, minorities, and so forth, it would mean a complete annihilation, not just the presidential level, but that it would have significant ripple effects
on the rest of yes. And see, and this is one of the things, like, because I've seen some counter analysis too, including my own, by the way, that says, you know, yes, Trump is certainly behind, and Clinton would probably beat him, but. You know, when people put out these he would be annihilated kinds of things, so far the numbers don't back up annihilated. They show him, for instance, he still losing to Clinton, by the way, but actually doing better than Romney did.
But here's the thing.
I know that's before we get into the whole campaign. But here's the thing.
Right.
Let me make this.
Romney had more favorable numbers with like women and with like minority groups.
I know. But let me make this point, because they comparing it to the Johnson landslide of 64 or 68 or whenever it was. One of the things that we have, if you look back in those decades going up through the 60s. If you looked, you had huge, or actually through the 80s, because there was the Reagan landslide too, you had huge swings of the electorate back and forth.
Yes.
So you had these, you know, massive landslides and people winning by huge percentages and it going back and forth in a very short number of years, actually.
Yes.
From a really big Republican win to a really quick Democratic win, sometimes in the matter of only 8 years. And what we've seen in more recent years is things are much more, the movement is much narrower. Like, you know,
normally it is. But I agree with you. But I gotta tell you, I think that if Trump wins the nomination, that like a lot of things that aren't holding, isn't going to hold either. Because when you have 65% of women in America that hold a negative view of Trump, okay? 75% of minorities that hold a negative view of Trump. I don't care what the numbers at the national scope says. A lot of people still aren't paying close attention to the campaign. If he goes out and he trots out with his nonsense on a national scale while everybody is fucking paying attention, there is no fucking way they're not getting annihilated.
And see, my thing is just, I think you have to tamp down your definition of annihilated.
No, I am not. I'm telling you, it's over a 10-point beat. There is no way that he is going to get, you know, more than 45%. It's going to be a 55-45 or a 60-40 because, like I said,
people
are not paying attention to this still, even with the high rating numbers in the thing.
Just for reference, the last time we had a 60-40 election, and it actually wasn't even quite 60-40, but almost, was 1984. Reagan's second.
And I wrote down that word. I'm telling you right now.
And the last time was 1972.
Mondale moment. Okay? They are on the verge if they do this. Okay? I wrote that word exactly. They are going towards their own fucking Mondale moment. Mm. Okay? There is no way he's not getting murdered in the general election. No way. Because of the high negative numbers that he's got. Okay?
So now I'm thinking, like, you know, you may be right, and things could deteriorate in that fashion. But so far, it's closer than that. It's not that it's showing he's winning. I'm not going to predict he's going to win, but I don't think it's going to be as much of a blowout as you think, simply because there's so many people are going to vote for their party no matter what.
Let me tell you something. How many? Of the voting population, how many are registered Republicans?
No, I know you've done this math. It's like 25-30%, and then you do 25-30% of that, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so you don't get to that number, Sam. You don't get to it. Even if it's a people voting. Listen, I have heard so many Republicans tell me, in person, Republicans that have never voted Democratic, telling me that they, if Trump is the candidate, they're not voting.
Here, here the actual last three poll, like Real Clear Politics is doing some national polls of the general election as well. And if you look at Trump versus Clinton, the Quinnipiac had a poll that came out a few days ago, or actually today, I think, shows Clinton up 6%. So that's, you know, it's a decent margin, but it's not like a blowout. 6%.
What's happened? Okay, I'm sorry. Oh, what's happened between the polls and the actual results the last couple of national
elections? Let me give you the other two. Fox had Trump ahead by 5. PPP had Clinton ahead by 1. In my own look at this thing, it shows Hillary winning by 68 electoral votes. But that's still a win for the Democrat, but it's not, but it's not as big a win as Obama had.
Like I said, I'm telling you again, I know you're focusing on this polling data.
I know.
The polling data right now is just fucking bullshit. It's nonsense. Okay.
No, I know.
Especially in the general election. Okay.
And I know.
You're taking that polling data versus the fact that, you know what, when you go and you poll about people, who do you like? Who don't you like? And they wind up with these fucking numbers, okay, that are just – he's got negatives that are so off the charts that nobody has gotten negative numbers that big, Sam. Nobody.
No, I know, especially in certain demographic groups.
Yes.
I definitely agree, and I think during the course of a campaign, a lot of these things would – I think what he's doing now – is really stoking up a certain minority group within the Republican Party. We're not even talking about the Republicans in general. We're talking about a subset of the Republicans that is, like we've talked before, it looks like he's got a ceiling at around 30% of the Republicans.
Right. Yep.
Are getting really, really excited about him. And so we're talking about a small portion of a small portion are really, really excited about him. Meanwhile, everybody else is looking at him like, you gotta be fucking insane. So I definitely can see that over the course of a campaign, his head-to-head numbers with Hillary would probably continue to go down. However, I want to play devil's advocate and do the other side of this, which is that Hillary's not that popular either. As I've said before, Trump's got a way of finding people's weaknesses. So my prediction, if he won the nomination, I don't think Trump is going to win the presidency. However, I don't think it would be as big a blowout as people are saying at the presidential level. I think he would lose, but it wouldn't be by like Mondale or what's his name?
McGovern. I guess the nomination is going to be like a Mondale moment. But let's look at the other numbers.
I think the downstream is a disaster regardless, though. If he won the nomination, it would be a disaster for the House, for the Senate, for et cetera. I'm not necessarily predicting it would flip the House, but it would be, they'd lose a lot of seats just from the downstream effect of having Trump at the top.
Now, let's look at other numbers that have been happening. So Carson's collapsing, all right, pretty fast.
And Cruz and Rubio are continuing to slowly move up.
Yeah. Cruz and Rubio continue, I mean, they just keep going up. It's just like up, 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 up.
I mean, not super fast, but they
keep climbing. We're talking at the beginning of November. October 29th.
What's interesting is
give you a number. October 29th, the rear clear politics showed Rubio at 9, mm-hmm. Cruz at 6.6. Yep. All right? Rubio now is at 13.8 and Cruz is at 13. Cruz doubled his polling number.
Yeah.
Okay, in a month.
And by the way, it looks like all of the people at the bottom aren't really moving very much.
Right.
So it looks like most of this is coming from Carson.
Yes.
So it's Carson folks bailing and going and picking either Rubio or Cruz as their backup.
Yes. Now, actually, there are some guys over here losing steam. I mean, one that lost a lot of steam, which I think Fiorina. Back in September at 11.6 and is right now down at 3.5.
Yes.
So that's a lot. I mean, she really lost a lot. And Bush as well. Bush was at close to 10%.
Yeah, I was specifically looking.
And he's down now to 5.
Specifically looking just at the last few weeks in terms of that comment. But
overall, if you look at the trend over the last couple of months, I mean, look, the guys who are the big losers are Bush and Fiorina.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've got Cruz and Rubio that are picking up a lot of steam. And Carson had picked up all this crazy steam. And all of a sudden, he's crashing and burning just as fast as he picked up the steam.
And by the way, I will point out that if you now add Cruz and Rubio together, you are almost at Trump.
Right.
Not quite, but almost.
Almost.
So that's a little bit of a change. And also, last week when we talked about this and talked about Trump's chances, I said 30% chance Trump actually gets the nomination, but I didn't specify the rest. And in another conversation, I was sort of compelled to. So I'll share my rest. My prediction for the rest of the odds are 30% Trump, 30% Rubio, 20% Cruz, 20% somebody else.
Mm.
That's how I would place the odds for these candidates here. So, so there's a spread. I mean, we are basically talking about Trump, Carson, and Rubio as the three most likely guys. I mean, yes, I know Carson is still ahead of Rubio and Cruz, but he's clearly trending down.
Yeah, his support is like collapsing like fast. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe Santorum makes a move. He's at 0.3, you think? Or Pataki at 0.5, or Graham at 0.5.
So I gave my odds. What? So I have, again, 30% Trump, 30% Rubio, 20% Cruz, 20% somebody else. That does add to 100, right? I did my math right?
I think you went over.
No, no. 30 plus 30 is 60, plus 20 is 80, plus 20 is 100. So I did it right.
Oh, so you did it right.
So what are yours? Wow.
I don't know, man. I mean, you actually went out on a limb and actually put percentages to say. I mean, I don't know. I might as well throw a fucking dart in a wall. Like, I don't know.
Well, last week you said you kind of agreed with the betting markets putting Rubio at around 50%.
I'm still saying, I will stick with that. I think that Rubio is still by 50. I'd say that Rubio is 50%.
Okay. How do you distribute your other 50?
I'd say evenly amongst the other three options, which could be Trump, Cruz, or somebody else. I think Carson's dead.
Okay, so what's that? 16.5%, something like that for each of those.
Yeah, I'm calling Carson dead.
I guess 16.25. I can't do math in my head.
16.33?
No.
Divided by three? What the fuck? What are you talking about? Anyway, something. Anyway.
Yeah, 16.66666% each. Yes.
Okay, 666, not 333. Okay, well, anyway, close enough. Off by third of a percent. Go suck. Okay, anyway. So,
but the interesting thing also about this New York Times article, and I was looking to find the citation, but got distracted by actually talking to you.
Heaven forbid.
One of the things, and there have actually been several other articles by other people about the similar things, is a lot of the quote unquote establishment folks have been sitting on the sidelines and not jumping in with their money, with their support, with their whatever.
Not doing anything.
And part of this is they're scared because they don't know how to deal with Trump, because so far everybody who's gone after Trump directly has actually gotten
clobbered.
They've gotten annihilated by Trump, who basically counterattacks and boom, they're dead, you know? They're reluctant to do that sort of direct frontal attack on Trump. They're also reluctant because Trump keeps doing this. Well, if I'm not treated fairly, I'm going to run third party.
I love that shit.
He basically, you know,
baiting them.
Yeah, he basically has full control of this situation. You know, because all of the people who potentially could go after him and stop him here are like, oh shit, we don't know what to do. We don't know how do we do this? And they're basically, there was one article, I think the title was like, everybody's waiting for Trump to collapse as part A. There is no plan B, you know?
Right.
Because everybody's just sort of been assuming this whole time that eventually
he's gonna collapse.
Trump will just collapse. And he hasn't. And he's been resilient whenever these things happen. And, you know, in the last few weeks, he's up again.
Right.
You know, he's gone.
But of course, he stayed in that range.
Yes. He stayed in
30% range. I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's like
23 to 30% is a.
Yep.
He's been stuck there since September, since August, really. You know, and he hasn't yet shown the ability to break out of that range. But again, depending on what happens here, he may not have to. There are ways that he can win the nomination sticking at this percentage.
He could, but look, we know. Look, here's a reality. We know that candidates are dropping out. We know this. Okay? Look, we're not going to get to New Hampshire with how many candidates? Listen, all these fucking guys that are at 5% or below. We're talking Bush, Fiorina, the Huckster, Christie, Kasich, blah, 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 blah. I mean, look, if you're a Kasich voter, are you going to fucking vote for Trump?
So I think
a Bush supporter. Are you fucking going to vote for Trump if he decides to drop out?
I think what we're really going to get here, because Trump is, we're 2 months out. Trump is still looking really nice in both New Hampshire and Iowa at the moment.
Yeah.
And so unless we do get that meltdown sometime in the next 2 months, what we're really looking at out of Iowa, New Hampshire is who ends up in a solid number two, so that after Iowa, New Hampshire, we essentially have a two-man race of Trump versus somebody.
It could be Rubio.
It could be Rubio. It could be Cruz.
It could be Cruz.
I mean, the Republican establishment doesn't like Cruz either, though.
Right.
But they're starting to think, well, maybe he's better than Trump.
God, Cruz better than Trump. I mean, it's like, what the hell?
Of course, Cruz has been spending all his time sucking up to Trump. So that you could act. So a lot of people are speculating, well, maybe what we're going to see is a Trump Cruz ticket.
Oh my God. That's so revolting. God, dude, what a revolting ticket. Oh, Jesus. Okay. Trump Cruz ticket. Well, fuck. Well, I thought I heard that Sarah Palin was trying to get in on the action, too. Oh, okay. So, speaking aside of the crazy events. What about this whole Trump crazy pastor event that he tried to get the going this week that what like exploded in his face?
Oh, the black pastors or whatever.
Right.
He was trying to get to endorse him and
right. And then they were all like, wait, we're coming over for a talk. What the fuck's he talking about an endorsement? We're a fucking endorse him.
Although he had this weird non-press conference afterwards where a couple of them sort of said that they were, but it's just a really weird thing, like all of his stuff.
I mean, this is the thing, and this son of a bitch stays ahead still with this shit going on. I mean, this was a fiasco, okay? Anybody else with a fiasco like this, they would be, you know, they would be just getting hammered. And
so there are a couple of articles, and I did not tweet them because I didn't get a chance to finish them yet. But basically talking about, and I think one might have been on Vox and one may have been in Washington Post, I forget. But basically talking about Trump's relationship with the truth.
Huh?
And and one of them was making the point that, you know, he's not really a liar. He's worse. He's a bullshitter, because a liar actually knows what the truth is and intentionally is saying something else. They essentially they know they're telling the falsehood.
Right, right.
Where Trump doesn't give a shit what the truth is.
Right.
That's irrelevant.
Yep.
You know, he just says what he wants to say in order to get to the next thing. And like the press has no idea how to deal with this when you have somebody who, you know, he says something and then you actually go in front of him and say, well, okay, but, you know, this and this show that that's not true. And he says, well, I don't know where you got that shit from. How do you know that? I'm right. I remember.
Well, it's like that whole moment with like at the debate with Becky Quick, who went and like quoted what his website said.
Yes,
he says that she's all wrong, and she's just like,
I'm sorry.
Well, let me check this again. I thought I had it right.
She downright apologized, and she said, "I apologize for getting that wrong."
Right.
Yeah, so these people have no freaking idea how to react to somebody who just doesn't care at all if you point out that what he says is completely and totally wrong or unsupported by facts or whatever. It doesn't matter. It just, and he won't like a normal politician, like, you know, if confronted with direct proof of unquestionable what you said is just factually wrong.
I will have to check. Let me get back to you and validate.
Or sometimes they'll even say, I'm sorry, I misspoke or something like that.
No. He's rare. Like telling you, you're wrong.
Yeah. He'll just double down.
Right.
And he'll say,
on everything.
Well, of course you'd say that. You're out to get me.
Right.
And of course the problem is that the folks who support Trump have been in this, there's been this mindset building over the last couple of decades that of course you can't trust the press because they're a bunch of liberal wackos anyway.
Right.
So you can't believe what they say. So the fact that, you know, CNN goes out and does something or the New York Times does something or the Washington Post or even Fox News doesn't matter to them because they've been trained not to trust anything those damn folks say because they're the mainstream media and they have their own agenda. And so don't trust them. So in fact, anything they say is probably a good reason to believe the opposite.
Right. Well, look, Trump went and berated the Iowans, for example, right? When he wound up being...
Are you really that stupid? He says.
And guess what? He's back in first place.
Yep, because I guess the Iowans went, you know, we are kind of stupid for thinking about Carson. Let's go back to Trump. He's right.
Now, I will say this, that Cruz is having quite a surge in Iowa.
Yes, and actually somebody pointed out that Christie is trying to make a surge in New Hampshire. It hasn't really happened yet, but yeah, Christie's trying to make his move.
I don't think that guy can move, to be honest. not exactly, you know, trying to make his move. Christy's trying to make his move. He's fucking trying to make his move back to Jersey, you know?
Anyway, but yes, Cruz has been making a move in Iowa.
So let's take a scenario where, yes. What if Cruz wins Iowa?
Okay. Yep. That's very seeable. Yes.
It's very possible.
Very possible.
And like Trump and Rubio come in tight close at second. Where do you think that leaves Trump?
Well, I think what's going to happen is everybody would immediately turn their eyes to New Hampshire. And then the, because weird people have won Iowa the last few times around.
Correct.
Santorum right. won, Huckabee won, you know, the winner in Iowa has not been that predictive. Right. So I think people would very quickly move on to New Hampshire. And right now Trump has a nice lead in New Hampshire. So
he does.
So I think people would say, oh, okay. There'd be a few days of saying, oh, maybe Cruz is going to be able to do it after all. And then we'd get to New Hampshire and say, yeah, okay, maybe not. Because fundamentally, the Republican base in Iowa is much more conservative than the Republican base in New Hampshire and has a different mindset on a lot of things. And so I think you would get that that sort of momentum wouldn't last very long out of Iowa for Cruz. But it may put him in a position where if he came in as the strong second in New Hampshire... Like, if he won Iowa and came in second in New Hampshire, then he might be the one, you know, like I said, I think it's going to wash out fairly quickly. Like, by the time, you know, the next one after those guys is South Carolina. After we get out of Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, I think we're really going to have two players. It's going to be Trump versus somebody.
Well, Cruz is polling relatively poor in New Hampshire compared to
to be expected. I mean, he's still what, fourth? Fourth. Yeah, he's fourth.
Yeah, he's fourth.
Assuming that Trump maintains his strength through till Iowa and we don't have that Trump collapse that everybody's been expecting for the last 5 months.
The collapse.
If we have, you know, Trump come in second in Iowa and first in New Hampshire, he's still got the momentum coming out of that. But, you know, if Cruz was the opposite of that, first in Iowa, second in New Hampshire, then it starts looking like a Cruz-Trump battle. And whoever's third, people often have used the phrase in the past that there are three tickets out of Iowa and New Hampshire. And so you could see Trump, Cruz, Rubio all surviving out of there. But then one of them is going to be in a weaker position than the other two.
Right.
And then we'll start seeing rapid consolidation as more states happen after that. And I would be surprised if we, well, nothing should surprise me this cycle. Every other time, essentially by the time you get to Super Tuesday, it's over.
Yeah.
Somebody has essentially what's an insurmountable lead,
right.
And people will still be talking about it for months and we will be talking about it for months in terms of, well, what are the scenarios where somebody could catch up and win here? But realistically, so after Super Tuesday, somebody has a very, very strong lead that would take a huge event to displace. And I think we're probably going to see that again this time. But I'll tell you, if we get past Super Tuesday and that's not true, if nobody's over 50% in the delegate count after Super Tuesday, then we've got some exciting fireworks for the rest of the primary season.
Okay. Well, all right. So I think that's all I got on this.
Okay. Let's take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Bring me the elephant on the stick.
account information.
Okay, we're back. And one more thing on that last topic before we move on.
I forgot something
that when I emailed, it was actually my dad I was talking to about these odds and stuff. When I gave my 30-30-20-20 breakdown, I also said, if anybody but Trump wins the Republican nomination, I give it a 50-50 shot that Trump will run third party. And if Trump does win the nomination, I give a 50-50 shot that one of the other Republicans will split off and run third party.
Bold.
There you go. Now,
bold. You go bold, then bolder.
So that's a 15% shot that Trump is the nominee and there is a significant Republican splinter group running as a third party. And I guess a 10%, no, it would be a 70, actually that's pretty high because it'd be a 35% chance that somebody else wins the nomination and Trump runs as the third party.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, I don't know. We did talk about, we wanted to talk about the climate talks. Yes. Not sure how much we have to add to the climate talks.
Here's my main point that I make every time there's one of these kinds of things. I think most of it is for show. There's not really the political will to do anything of a magnitude that would make a significant difference. So there will be something that comes out of this that people make commitments for X, Y, or Z, including, and they're sort of internal commitments with no real enforcement mechanism for the most part. But the commitments they're making will be marginal enough that, you know, the scientists will all say, okay, that's nice, but it's not enough. And that part of the commitments are, we're going to talk again in a few years to try to do something more dramatic. But I think, you know, it's all sort of, to me, it seems like it's mostly just posturing, without very much that actually has a shot of making a difference. And my frustrations with all of this is I see like, okay, the political will is never going to be there to outright like, you know, hey, let's cut our current carbon consumption by 70% or whatever it would take to make the scientists happy on this. That's just not going to happen. People aren't giving up their cars in the short term. So, and I think the long term changes for efficiency and stuff are happening, but they're happening too slowly. So we really need to start concentrating on the how do we adapt. Okay.
That's been a big part of the talks, like right now, especially by a lot of the poorer countries that have been demanding that the rich countries. Because, look, one of the things about this reality is that the rich countries will probably be able to adapt to whatever the hell's going to happen. That's just a reality. What the problem is going to be, a lot of the poor countries do not have the resources to do that. And so they are going to be hit with some substantial problems and issues. I will tell you that down here, you know, they were showing an article about the Marshall Islands and the struggle they're having with the sea level rise because they are so low.
Because basically that whole country is like 2 feet above sea level.
Yeah,
so,
they're
screwed.
Yeah, they've got a lot of problems with that versus what's happening, say, in Miami Beach, which has condos that are worth $25 million. Miami Beach is struggling with the same issue. They're relatively low to the water, but they're right now spending about an inordinate amount of money in basically walling off frickin' Miami Beach, raising streets, raising everything, putting in pumps, doing all of this stuff that, you know what? If any of this shit happens, Miami Beach are like, who cares?
Yeah, I mean, like, the Netherlands proved this was possible centuries ago.
Exactly.
The whole damn country's below sea level.
Exactly.
Know? And they use technology to adapt anyway. But that stuff is expensive and requires a thriving economy to do.
That's right. And so that's the reality. There was a number of foreign ministers. Some people were receptive, but the reality is that, you know, I think that there was in the article that I read today, there was a statement by the Indian delegate who was like, who cares? Or something along those lines.
About the Marshall Islands?
About those countries and those problems. They were like, who gives a fuck? You know, it was very matter of fact in that way.
Yeah, and like the Marshall Islands is small, so like you could resettle every person in the Marshall Islands for not...
Right, there's probably there's less 70, of that. There's like 30, I think it's like 30 or 70,000 people. Yeah. Here's the other reality. They all have... they all can immigrate to the U.S. They actually, there is an immigration treaty that they are completely allowed to immigrate to the U.S. So the reality is, like a number said, well, you know, fucking Dylan's going underwater. They're going to be here. We're taking them. That's the reality, whether we like it or not. They're coming.
We better screen them and make sure they're Christian. Whatever, you know. They might be dangerous like those damn Syrians.
Oh yeah, of course.
And anyway,
we did nuke these people, by the way. You know, so yes. Anyway,
there are other places like Bangladesh, right? Is also very low lying. Am I thinking?
Yes, that's correct. And Bangladesh is one of the countries that probably be the most impacted by sea level rise. If I understood correctly, 22% of the land could displace about, I don't know, how many millions of people in Bangladesh. They would be really one of the hardest hit countries.
Because they're also very poor.
Then they are also extremely poor. Part of that's the big problem. If they had money, then, you know, whatever, but they're not. They're poor. So...
Yeah, and also things like you mentioned, it is tied to wealth as well. Like you may have different places being able to support different kinds of agriculture than they have been in the past, and so some places that have been in the past been able to sustain themselves won't be able to anymore. But if that happens to you and you're a poor country and now you have to import all your food, guess what? You can't. But if you're the United States and you have to import your food from Canada instead of getting it from Nebraska, okay, we'll buy it from Canada.
Yep.
You know? So there are differences there. So I think, but my bottom line is like, I think it's a political fantasy to go after, like, let's do these regulations that'll cut carbon emissions by huge percentages or anything like that.
It's just, look, like I said, a lot of people are talking about this. The regulations are going to be the thing. It's what's happening is, look, as costs, the only thing that's going to do it is that the technology drops and makes it cost effective that the people to do this.
Right.
It's happening.
Right. And the only question on that kind of stuff is it is definitely happening. The question is, does it happen fast enough. And so far it has not been happening fast enough. But where I'm saying that, you know, we should have more efforts than we have are at what we were just talking about, mitigation of, okay, how do we help people adapt to the changing climate? Let's assume the changing climate is going to happen. Let's figure out how to adapt to it without having a lot of displacement and problems for people. And second, is geoengineering stuff. And people are afraid of that, but I think we should be spending more time and money researching in that area. Like, okay, because people have a number of different theories, and I always joke about nuking Antarctica or whatever and causing a global winter, a nuclear winter, a la Carl Sagan in the 1970s. But more realistically, there are things that people have talked about ways that you could seed the atmosphere with various things to counteract the effects of the increased carbon dioxide in atmosphere, or you could do things with orbiting mirrors and all kinds of things. There are all kinds of interesting ideas that would have to be looked into. Now, people have pointed out the downside of those kinds of solutions is you can create a dependency cycle where the only way things are habitable is if you keep dumping stuff into the atmosphere to counteract the carbon.
Right.
And so if you ever stop, things get much worse really fast.
Look, the reality is that in the planet, we have people living in substantially wide ranges of like temperatures and things and stuff. We have had mass changes over time. We have had these changes. They are difficult to adapt. They do cause problems. I'm not minimizing that, but at the same time, I mean, you know, there are certain things that there is only so much that I think that realistically we can expect to happen with technology to reduction of carbon emissions in the short term. I think the reality is that we have to focus on figuring out how to, you know, live with a lot of these changes to a certain extent.
And this, to a certain extent, is important because, I mean, what we are talking about are changes that, yes, things have gone up and down in the past of the planet. However, we are talking about changes that potentially will exceed anything that the planet has seen since human beings have been human beings. So it's not like, oh, we're just going to have something like we had in medieval times or something like that. No, it's we are potentially talking about a type of climate that has not been seen, you know, since human beings evolved. So this is very significant, but human beings are smart.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've had people living in like the pitch cold of the earth to like the middle of a desert. I'm not saying I know it's a change, but, you know, hell, we got people floating in a fucking space station, for God's sakes, for I don't know how long we had them up there now.
Well, and of course, Putin has joked on a number of occasions now, and I forget the original citation for this, I'm remembering it from years ago, that, wait, you mean Moscow is going to be warmer into winter? Bring it on!
Oh, man. Well, you know, I don't know. Look, I know, like I said, I said at the beginning, I am trying to do the best that I can personally and have plans to do more in order to reduce our carbon footprint. But at the same time, I mean, you know, we got to be realistic about what the hell we've got. And we gotta figure out the best way to deal with it at this point.
Well, and I think, and by the way, I think the global warming part of it, the climate change part of it, has taken most of the attention lately. But there's also another factor, although it's even more long term, which of course all of these are non-renewable resources.
Correct.
And if you keep using them up at a rate faster than the planet can replenish them, eventually you are going to run out.
Right.
And it's probably not in our lifetimes or our kids' lifetimes or probably not even in our grandkids' lifetimes, but it would happen eventually if you keep going at the rate you have. And so what you're doing, if you don't start actively engaging on how can we do this in a renewable way, then
but you're, we are, you're, but we are.
No, we are at a very slow rate. Just, you know, again, the question is it being done fast enough? It's not, are we doing it? It's, are we doing it fast enough? You know, but if you do you don't want to get a situation where, you know, 500 years down the road, our descendants, are screwed because there's just no more coal or oil available, period, end of story.
I think that, you know, the development of where technology's going,
we're talking on a 500-year time period, we're fine. So, I mean, yeah, there are a lot of trends that are in the right direction. Again, the question is the magnitude.
And how we're going to deal with the fact that we didn't deal with it fast enough before and the impacts that it will have.
Because I think people are right that you probably will get people 100 years from now, 200 years ago, going, God damn it, why weren't they faster?
Right.
Because we're having trouble here now where if we'd only taken this seriously 100 years earlier.
Agreed.
When we had all the science,
I mean, we'd be in better shape. Yeah, agreed.
But, you know, the question is, how do you do that in a way that, you know, respects essentially people's autonomy and everything like that? Because I don't want a world where the government can just say outright, okay, no more cars.
Right.
You know? Whatever, or, you know, okay, everybody's going to have to ration electricity now. Only 6 hours a day of electricity from now on. No, I would rather not do that. We have to find a way where we can solve these problems while, you know, and yes, I want to be selfish about it while not giving up shit.
I want my
electricity. I want my heat. I want my air conditioning. I want all the amenities of modern lifestyle. But, you know, yeah, I'd be much happier if I could do that without putting tons of CO2 in the atmosphere and without using up non-renewable resources.
Well, let me just say that I've unsuccessfully, I contacted one company to kickstart our solar project over here at my condo. I was start with one building that I talked to the board, and we want to the common areas of our condo. We want to power with solar power. So we're studying that. I'm open, to try to see what I can get done by, in the next 12, 18 months. And I will let everybody know how that goes.
The way to go, personal nuclear reactors.
That would be
cool. A nuclear reactor in every home.
Like, like the one in Back to the Future.
There you go.
You know, those were cool. That would have been cool.
That's of course the long held promise of someday we'll figure out how to do fusion right, and it'll be nice clean power. But even without that, just give everybody a hunk of uranium to stick in their house, and yeah, every once in a while somebody will just make a bomb out of it and blow up. But most of the time people will be fine.
Okay. All right. Great. Anyway. All right. I think it's time to take a break.
Yep. We'll be back after this. Up for a lightning round?
Let's do a couple of things. Let's see. I don't know what you've got. I don't know. We'll try something.
We'll be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Here we go. Welcome back to our lightning round.
Yep. The lightning round.
So, right as we were in the break, Yvonne was mentioning flooding in India. You want to say anything about that? Is that a lightning round topic?
I don't know. It was flooded. It rained a lot. I saw in Chennai, which, if I remember correctly, it was which one was Chennai? Oh, gosh. I can't remember the names of the towns. Anyway.
You mean the old name?
Yeah. Anyway, Chennai, which is one of the outsourcing tech hubs places, it was so flooded that they had to shut down the airport. I mean, the runways were flooded. I mean, there was water covering the tires. I saw a picture of water covering the tires of an airplane at the airport. It was pretty, a lot of rain. I that's all I have to say about that.
Madras, by the way. Chennai used to be known as Madras.
That was Madras? Okay. All right. There you go.
Okay. So I will do one. There was an issue a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you were affected by this, but the Mac App Store had a failure where they accidentally let some certificate expire or something like that. But the end result is a lot of apps that people had bought on the Mac App Store just started failing. You would try to open them. They would give you an error. Sometimes they would require you to re-authenticate with Apple, and then they would work again. But a significant portion of the time, the only way to get it to work again was to delete the app and reinstall it from the Mac Store.
I did not have that happen to me.
I had four or five apps that I use all the time that were made non-functional by this. And, because I was an enthusiastic user of the Mac App Store. So
I've bought some, but I guess I have perhaps not encountered the issue. Right.
Yeah. But I had several programs that fell into this category that I use on a regular basis and had this happen to me. And it was a major pain in the ass. It never should have happened. It was sloppy on the part of Apple, but it shook a lot of developers' confidence in Apple, and they were already not very happy. There are a lot of major Mac developers who have been leaving the Mac App Store for a variety of reasons, including it's fairly slow to approve changes. There's still no sort of way to do a paid upgrade. So, and you know, people complain about this on iOS as well, but on the Mac, people are saying, well, you know, look, we've got like major applications and major functionality that, you know, when we do we put a lot of money into a major upgrade, we need to charge people again to buy the upgrade. And there's no mechanism to do that right now. Where now they could put out like a separate app and have people buy that. But what they want to do is make it so
notify, right?
You all, yeah. Hey, I got the bell back.
Okay.
But,
well,
but they want to make it so people can, you know, if new people pay full price, but upgraders pay less, and there's no way to do that right now. And there are a lot of other things. So Apple is sort of, you know, the apps on iOS have been an unmitigated success, even with their limitations, although there are people complaining about those limitations too. But on the Mac, it's been not so hot.
It's not that right. Well, I think in part also because people used to be buying apps directly from a lot of the software vendors directly. I mean, you know, I got to be honest. I mean,
And also, frankly, a lot of people don't add anything to their computer because it comes with everything they need now. It comes with a browser. It comes with a mail program. It comes with a photo program.
I don't add apps.
And so the kind of apps that people do buy,
Microsoft Office.
Yeah, but like, but they're bigger, more expensive things for the most part, and it's a different model. And yes, the developers have other alternatives, and Apple has not been putting into the attention into it, and they haven't been paying attention to the developers' complaints. Basically, I mean, the developers have said, "Look, we can't make a viable business." Excuse me, out of this because of X, Y, and Z. Apple, please fix it. And so far, Apple's been like, yeah, whatever. You know, so I don't know if the Mac App Store will eventually just fade away or whether they're going to, at some point, decide to fix it. I don't know. Okay, your turn.
Today is... December 3rd.
You have nothing. The iPad Pro came out.
Yep, it did. That's
right. You still want one?
That's right.
You still want one?
Yeah, sure. I'd love one, but I'm not spending money on that kind of stuff right now.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I still see it and I'm like, no, I don't want it.
I got a friend of mine who got one, loves it. You know, I'm actually more want, and I tried it already, played with it a little bit. The new Apple TV, damn, new remote, that's slick. I want one. I'm gonna get one.
I had been thinking, you know, that I would definitely get one soon after they came out, but it's so close to the holidays. Yeah, I threw it on my Amazon wish list. I don't expect anybody to actually get it for me, but like maybe January, like assuming nobody surprises me.
I definitely want one. I went to a store and I tried out the remote and stuff or whatever. I just wasn't like in a spending day. I just wanted to try it. And I was like, damn, I liked it. I definitely liked it.
And it's got more capabilities and it's got games and better search and this and that.
Yeah. Everything. Everything overall better. I give it a very enthusiastic two thumbs up.
Now, it's still one of those things that, the value is best if you're already in the Apple ecosystem.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm not sure they've sort of broken out so that it's better than some of the competitors that don't rely on the Apple ecosystem. If you're not in the Apple ecosystem. Yes. But it's a lot closer than it was. And if you are in the Apple ecosystem, there's no other choice. That it's what you want, you know, to do this kind of stuff. If you are already, you know, your music is on iTunes and you're buying stuff from Apple anyway, etc. So,
yes.
Okay. My turn again. I'll jump ahead to this because I don't know how many more we're going to do. Two more movies I watched. I continued on with the King Kong series and watched The Son of Kong from 1933. Some of you may remember I watched the original King Kong a few months ago. This was a sequel that was put out less than 9 months later to capitalize on the success of the first one.
And how did it do? Sucks.
It wasn't great. I mean, it had some things that were better than the first one, but it wasn't great. It wasn't, like, very memorable. Overall, I mean, like, yeah, the first one's the one that, of course, created the icon and blah, blah, blah. This was fairly derivative and, you know, okay, fine. I didn't go away saying this is horrible, but, you know, whatever. It was a movie. The other one I watched was actually in the theater. I went with my wife and my son to the Peanuts movie, the new Charlie Brown movie.
And?
It was okay. I liked it. Now, one of the
better
things...
Better
than Son of Kong?
Yep.
Yeah, if I had to watch one of them again, I would pick the Peanuts movie. Because it was cute. It was one of the things that it was really faithful to the original Peanuts. I mean, they updated the animation style and stuff a little bit, but it was still very much, you could tell, they didn't change it too much. It looked like the old cartoons. It had the feel of the old cartoons. And one of the things was, it also had somewhat of the pacing of the old cartoons, which meant it was it's a little slow for modern audiences, you know, but you know, it's for kids, you know, and it was okay being slow. And I feel like, you know, it was, cause if you watch any of those old Peanut specials and, the Christmas one was probably on this week somewhere. And of course it's available.
I remember those. I used to love those.
Yeah, those are great. But if you watch them today, you'll notice that they're only 30 minutes long, but they feel like they take a long time cause things move very slowly and they talk slowly and they, you know, they slowly get to the point. But you know, I felt like when watching this movie, if they'd changed that, if they'd sped it up and made it more modern and had things happening a lot quicker and had sort of quick cuts between the action here and the action there, I would have come out going, what the hell did they do to Peanuts? They right. screwed it up because they changed it into something completely different. But no, they were very faithful to the sort of the feel of the original. And I saw a few people point out they did make some changes to like all the kids were in one school. Whereas in the original cartoon, half of the kids were actually from a different neighborhood and a different school, and that's why their baseball teams played against each other. But here they were all in one school and all in one classroom, which, you know, also mixed up the ages a little bit. But whatever. It is cute. It was a nice, slow, cute movie. You know, it was fun. You know, I wouldn't go to this if you didn't have a kid to take with you, but it was an okay little movie. Okay. That's it for that.
Okay, well, I don't have anything else.
Okay, I will mention one more thing.
Yeah.
And we don't have time for a full conversation on this, so maybe someday we should do a whole 15 minutes on it. But this is the whole thing that there was a whole controversy. A few weeks now, actually, with Halloween at Yale and sort of free speech versus political correctness versus safe zones versus all this stuff. And it sort of tied into the protests that were happening in Missouri as well. And sort of the notion of, you know, people wanting to be protected from offensive ideas. And this is always something that really pisses me off whenever I start talking about it, because I feel like one of the critical aspects, especially of the college experience, is that you should be exposed to things that offend you.
Agreed.
It's like how you want to take things that burst you out of whatever bubble you were in when you came to school and widen your horizons and all this kind of stuff. So yes, I want to hear from the damn neo-Nazi at my school, even if I'm not a neo-Nazi. I want to hear from the people who disagree with me. Like, you know, we were talking about gun control. Yes, I want to have a lively debate about gun control with both people talking about it. I want the pro-abortion people and the anti-abortion people. I want everybody. Yeah, I want to have those debates. I want to hear that stuff.
We had an artist, I remember. There was a couple of artists. We had the one that had art that, for the most part, was made out of shit, if I remember correctly.
Oh, goody. You know? That's always a good material.
That was, you know, it's like, that was one. There was another one that had all these pictures and depictions, this entire art show of, like, just people in, like, quite a lot of sadomasochistic, like, sex acts.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember that I'm walking past the exhibit. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Are they shoving what up that guy's ass? What the fuck? Wait a minute. I'm like, wait a minute, this is the art exhibit. I was like, look, not my cup of tea in terms of art. Okay, can I be honest? Not exactly what I would, like, you know, take. But look, it's like you said, it's the stuff out of your comfort zone. I mean, it's, you know, that's what you're there for, to be exposed to all these different concepts and ideas. And, you know, I mean, you know, instead of, like, being in this entirely sterile environment of the same shit.
And this goes for the sort of trigger warnings and those kinds of things as well, where people are sort of, you know, in classes warning people up front, oh my, we may be talking about a topic that may be sensitive to certain people, and so we want to warn you, and if this is a problem for you, leave now, and maybe we'll get you some alternative material. And, you know, I understand that some people do have traumatic experiences in their past that make it very difficult for them to talk about certain subjects. And I do want to be somewhat sensitive to that. On the other hand, we can't construct society around the notion that nobody can ever do something that will upset somebody else. You know, we've got to sort of, society as a whole should be, you know, if you know you have certain specific issues that are problems for you, you need to sort of own that and deal with that. You can't expect everybody to walk on eggshells around you to avoid those topics.
Well, I mean, I think we had people that wanted that, like, at some point at school, but the reality is that the prevailing thought was different when we were at school. I mean, you know.
And I sort of look at all of these things where this kind of stuff comes up, and I'm like, no, come on, guys. You know, suck it up, deal with it. There are things that will make you uncomfortable, and I'm not, and again, I want to carve out, there are certain people with real problems, and okay, you're going to have to deal with that differently. But for the most part, you know, normal people going through their stuff, yes, you know, part of growing up and part of the college experience is exactly being exposed to things that make you uncomfortable, that fundamentally challenge your beliefs at a core level and make you think about them carefully and assess whether you were right in the past or whether you were wrong and need to change your mind. And all of these tendencies seem to be towards diminishing that experience by trying to protect everybody and make them comfortable and give them a quote unquote safe space. And I worry about that tendency. Now I don't want, at the same time, I don't want to dismiss all the concerns. I don't want to dismiss the people who are saying, you know, yes, we should call out the racist on campus who's wearing a racist costume at Halloween. Yeah. Yes. You should feel free to call them out on that. And I don't think it was offensive. Like, when the person put out the memo that started this at Yale was somebody basically putting out a memo saying, you know, hey, be sensitive and, you know, realize that certain costumes might be offensive to others and think about that. I think that's a perfectly reasonable memo to point out, and that it, in and of itself, is not threatening free speech. Threatening free speech would be taking the person who does wear the offensive costume and kicking them out of school or something. That would actually be something to battle over, I think, like, because I think they should be able to wear the offensive costume and just be called out on it. They shouldn't necessarily, you know, have something horrible happen to them because of it. But, you know, the memo that was like, be sensitive to others, that's cool. Of course, let's all be sensitive to others. I think the pendulum's swinging too far in this direction. I think people have to get a little bit thicker skins on a bunch of stuff. And yes, everybody should be nice to everybody, but you shouldn't go around the world expecting everything to always be the way you want it to be and getting offended if it's not.
Well, anyway,
that's my thought.
Okay. So, all right. Sam had his final rant.
I had my final rant. And I guess we can call it done.
Yep. It's another wonderful Curmudgeon's Corner down.
Down the hatch. Tubes.
Hatch.
Down the toilet.
No. Please, not and, down the toilet.
And with this, we flush another show down the toilet.
Look, I listen to a sports show in the morning that people, like, there's a lot of people very polarizing and despised. Listen, believe me, we're lucky we don't get the kind of hate messages that they get on a regular basis. They keep posting all the vitriol about how people hate it. You know, it's like, it's really funny. Anyway, all right, we're done.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. As usual, like us on Facebook, comment on Facebook. Oh, and after I bitched last week about everybody, about not having that many additional people because of all the likes we've had on Facebook, this week apparently is a very strong week. We've got a lot of people listening in the last week, so thank you all. But like us on Facebook, comment on Facebook. You can reach Yvonne or I on Twitter. I'm Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne is I-M-B-O-U. We love to hear from all you guys. But in the meantime, tell your friends, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.